To put this in perspective, in the history of Vanderbilt football, they had never beaten Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee in the same year. And here, Pat and Robinette beat Georgia, beat Florida, beat Tennessee in his redshirt freshman year. From afar, I watched this film. I was so happy for Patton. At the same time, my gut just wrenched as I thought to myself, God, I wish I was coaching that guy.
Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century on Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm Dr. Marcia Mountshute.
And I'm Coach John Shute.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
And we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond the sound bites and highlight reels.
On our last episode of Going Deep, we left Pat and Robinette running off the UNC Chapel Hill campus so that he wouldn't be there on the first day of class and his NCAA eligibility would be intact for him to play at another Division I school. Remember that this story, as we continue our conversation with Patton, is not a tragedy, although there are many of those in the story of NCAA revenue sports and colleges across this country. But this is a story that captures a deep truth about the way NCAA regulations and rules and that just the ethos created on college campuses work. This is a story that shows us in clear relief how the NCAA conspires against meaningful relationships and strong communities. We're glad you've joined us as we continue our conversation with the best quarterback you've never heard of.
Choose a school based on relationships that you forge with people. And, you know, you were never going to go to a school that wasn't a high academic school, you know, because you're an incredibly bright young man and you wanted to get to med school. But you choose schools based on relationships with people that you meet, whether it's Alan Mogridge, Bryn Renner, our quarterback, in our relationship. And I, too, invest feelings deeply in that relationship. And when these schools just fire coaches willy-nilly and without even thinking and then expect young 17-year-old, 18-year-old young men to stick to these decisions, it's gut-wrenching for me. And if you remember when you went to Vanderbilt, one of the things that I said to you, or before you went to Vanderbilt, but in that conversation in our house, one of the things that I said is, you know, so our listeners know, I have masters from Vanderbilt. Marcia has a master's from Vanderbilt. We love Vanderbilt. My brother was coaching there. But one of the things I said to you is, I think that head coach, James Franklin, is really looking to move on.
Yeah.
And so this entire process that we've been talking about, where you finally end up choosing a place, you kind of have to go through it again. Because I want our listeners to understand, in my mind, I really thought, I can remember sitting here talking to the director of admissions at North Carolina, and he's looking at your transcript, and he's saying, holy moly, this guy's brilliant. And I kept saying to him, holy moly, this guy's the number one pick of the NFL draft and going to lead us to a national championship. You don't understand how good of a player this is. And this is what people need to understand. Vanderbilt does not have a rich tradition of football. They have a tradition, and it's okay, but...
Hey, you can get a better coach. Come on.
Well,
come on.
Well, now...
He had some moments.
This is important to remember. Your redshirt freshman year is the only time Vanderbilt has ever beaten Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee in the same year. And so I, from afar, am watching now this freshman quarterback that I've got feelings invested in as well elevate this program to heights that it's never been. And then my heart breaks because I know things are about to change for you again.
Yeah.
So can you walk us through that redshirt freshman year at Vanderbilt, where Vanderbilt, you put down a 9-4 record in the SEC, which Vanderbilt had never done before, and you're engineering some of the biggest wins in the school history, and then the coach leaves again. Because, in his estimation, he leaves for bigger, greener pastures.
If football was, it was bigger, greener pastures.
That's true. Well, those are some pretty kind words. I was on those teams that did really well. I don't know if I was the one, you know, making all the plays, but we had some good teams when I was at Vandy, and it was fun to be a part of it and be at a place that hadn't, like you said, had much strong football tradition, and to turn that around and, you know, be two really, really good teams, both my freshman and redshirt freshman years. It was a lot of fun. But, we all knew, and that was about Coach Franklin. And, you know, I would never say a bad word about Coach Franklin. He gave me an unbelievable opportunity at Vanderbilt and was always supportive of my athletic and academic dreams and never asked me to compromise them. So can't speak ill of him. He was great, but we all knew, even when we signed on the dotted line to come to Vandy, that, you know, he was such a rising star in the coaching ranks, and obviously the work that he and your brother did at Vandy to elevate the program. We knew that it was probably only a matter of time, no matter what they told us about staying. But it was tough. I remember after that great season we had, we beat Georgia at home, Florida in the Swamp for the first time since the 40s, I think, and then beat Tennessee in Knoxville, which was a real treat for me, being someone who grew up right outside Knoxville. And especially, I don't know if you remember that game, Coach, but I got to score the winning touchdown in that game with 10 seconds left in the fourth quarter. That was probably, aside from getting into medical school and marrying my wife, probably one of my, my top three greatest moments in my life. That was incredible.
I remember it vividly, and I followed your career a lot closer than probably you'd be comfortable knowing.
Yeah, I think we were always happy to hear, like, about good things. We were so glad you were having some good memories and some success, and that you were able to do what you wanted to do. We were in this business for a long time, and we had some hard knocks, but the part that I would not trade for anything are the relationships. And so we root for people. There is not one team I root for in this universe anymore. You know, I root for people. And so we always rooted for Pat and Robinette. I mean, whatever was happening for you, we wanted it to go well for you. And we were always so happy when we'd hear or see something going well for you.
Yeah, you know, but it's a complicated feeling. happy on one hand, but there's a part of me too that was just, it hurt me so bad to see such a great player having such remarkable success. I mean, really, what you did in that 2013 season at Vanderbilt, I don't think that'll ever be duplicated. And you're right, Marsh, we were happy. Honest to goodness, in the bottom of my heart, I was happy. But it also kind of makes me sad that in the honest moments with myself, I also think I should be coaching that son of a gun right now. You know?
But you were never mad at Pat.
No,
I mean,
I wasn't.
Mad at the system.
There was a great deal of happiness, but there was real pain as well.
Watching
you score that touchdown, I remember it vividly. You ran it in, watching you score that touchdown, and then knowing that coach is going to leave. You're going through another coaching change. And in my heart, you know, I know you had great players and you had great teams. In my heart, you were one of the real reasons that guy now gets to move on.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, I don't fault coaches for doing that stuff either. Even though we didn't always make that choice when we had the opportunity, I understand why coaches do that. That is how the system works, and that is how you keep moving. I think sometimes the fact that we didn't make that decision in John's career did have an adverse effect. The fact that we, as Christians, as people who invest in relationships, said, you know what, we're going to stay here because we care about these people, did not help his career. So there's ambiguity there in kind of what's right and wrong.
Kind of the next thing I'd like to talk about is the coaching change that you went through then at Vanderbilt with Coach Mason coming in.
Right.
And, I mean, you've hit every kind of hot topic in college football because you get injured and you are out 5 games with a concussion when he comes in. And then you have to make a decision in terms of being able to play big time football and balance the academics in a way that you want to. And so if we can kind of hit through that coaching transition, the injury, and then the decision of how to balance these things. So if you could maybe kind of start with the whole process of now Franklin is gone and talk us through the transition with a new coach. Again, in some ways, from Butch Davis to the interim head coach at North Carolina, Everett Withers, to James Franklin, to Kevin Mason,
even
Larry Fedora. In some ways, you're fifth head coach and you're only a sophomore. In some ways.
It certainly felt that way. We had the big win against UT, and like you said, you could see the writing on the wall. I don't know if we could. I think we all were a bit naive and, you know, really wanted to think that he wanted to stick around Vandy and that he saw that, you know, we could be a great program, and ended up going to a bowl game, played Houston in the Compass Bowl in Birmingham. I only remember that game because I remember I did not play well. But we still won. Like I said, we had some great players who picked up the team, and we got the I think only the fourth or fifth bowl win in our school's illustrious football history. I think the rumors actually started while we were preparing for that game. I think at that point, Texas had just fired Mack Brown, and were looking for their next head coach. And we had a lot of our guys were on Twitter and all about that stuff and always following the rumors. And there was a lot of rumors floating around that James Franklin was going to be the next head coach at Texas. And I remember thinking to myself and my close friends on the team were talking about it, like, man, this stinks. You know, we're going to play this game, and then, you know, what if he leaves? What if he goes to Texas? We're right back at square one with a new staff. But he didn't take that job, or he didn't get offered that job, and it ultimately went to Charlie Strong, I believe. where you're like, well, maybe it'll be okay. Maybe he'll stay. And then we started hearing about Penn State because I can't remember who their coach was. I think he took an NFL job.
Yeah, Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien, that's right. And then we started hearing about his name, Penn State. And that was when it really started to worry us, I think, because we knew he was from Pennsylvania, went to school there, had a lot of strong ties to the state. And, you know, as far as a school that invests a lot in its football program, Penn State has got to be up there and a great tradition. Hard to beat it. And I still think in my heart of hearts and hope that he meant it when he said it, but he told us that, you know, he was considering the job, but really only because he wanted to use it as leverage to get us and Vanderbilt football better things. And I think we all really hoped that was the case, but I think the less naive members of the team were like, I don't know about this, guys. I think this is it. I think he's going to take this job. It's a great fit for him and his family and for what he wants to do. I think at that point he was a little bit frustrated with Vanderbilt's commitment to football. I can't speculate about it. I can't say that for him. I'm just speculating. I don't know. I remember it was a Friday. It was a Saturday morning. And somebody had read on Twitter or one of the social medias that he had taken the job at Penn State. And I remember getting they had this service, a blast text service. They would text something and it would go to every member of the team. And we got a text saying team meeting tomorrow morning in the film theater. We knew at that point. And we showed up to the meeting and, they told us the staff was moving to Penn State. They had taken this new job and everyone was really emotional. They were emotional. I think a lot of the coordinators and position coaches were emotional because I think a lot of them really loved Nashville. I mean, Nashville's a great town. I would argue it's one of the best towns in the country right now. And yeah. I don't think a lot of them didn't want to leave, but yeah. Kind of had to, you know, they had a new job. It was tough. We were coachless. We didn't have a single coach in the building except for the strength coach. Our strength coach at the time, a guy named Dwight Galt, who was an unbelievable guy, ended up going to Penn State. But he and a member of his staff I remember they left someone who was going to go to Penn State, one of the strength coaches, behind until we found the new coach. In order for us to, you know, keep training. And
yeah.
That meant a lot to me. They didn't have to do that, and they did, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
But so the coaching search begins. It's late in the game. It's early January. We're getting ready to start. We were supposed to be getting ready to start winter workouts in February and spring practice in late February and early March, and we're behind the eight ball. And all these names are floating around. I think one of the names was Chad Morris out of Clemson, who was the offensive coordinator. And then Coach Mason out of Stanford, the defensive coordinator, the guy who had stopped all those vaunted Oregon offenses. And ended up going to him, which I think was a great decision. I love Coach Mason. But as a defensive guy, we didn't have an offensive coordinator, and it took them another month to find an offensive coordinator. So we're all just kind of floating out in limbo before spring practice starts. And ultimately we get Carl Durrell, who's another guy that I just have a whole lot of respect for. Was the head coach at UCLA for a while. Now I think he's with the Jets. But came to be our offensive coordinator. And here we are. We're going to do this. And we're all still trying to balance academics. I remember I was in several pre-med courses during that time and labs and things like that. And I just remember it being a very stressful time for all of us.
listen to your story, like, all these people involved are good people. It's not like somebody's, you know, a bad person, but it's amazing that your heart stayed in it. Like, you stayed ready to, like, okay, we're behind, but we're gonna make this happen. I'm still gonna give this a shot. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. That kind of resilience is not all that common, I would think.
I would agree.
I'll tell you, it didn't feel very resilient at the time. I think we all felt a little defeated.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, we all love Coach Franklin, and we all love that whole staff, your brother included, and them leaving, that, you know.
It hurts.
It hurt. It did.
Yeah.
And again, it's a business. We understood why he did it. But it still hurt.
It does hurt. It's like it's a big loss. Like, I remember the times that John got fired places, and then other people were coaching the players that we loved. It felt like a divorce. It felt like somebody took our kids away from us or something. It hurts. It hurts a lot.
You know, you said the words. It's a business. It's a business for everybody, but the young men that are getting drugged through this just in unfair ways, you know, in unfair ways. And so if you can, you know, in the 2014 season then, I know the team didn't start off great. And as you said, you were a little bit behind the eight ball. But then I also know you got injured. And if you could talk about just that season and the injury a little bit and kind of where that left you.
So that was undoubtedly my the hardest season of football. Because it started out with, you know, such hope. We knew we got a late start, but, you know, we had worked really, really hard all off season, all during the spring, all during camp. We thought we were ready to go. And, you know, the guys that I came in with, that I was recruited with at Vanderbilt, to Vanderbilt in my class, we had never had a losing season. We were, we had went 9-4, 9-4, won two bowl games. We were not used to losing and didn't want to lose. No, nobody wants to lose, but we certainly didn't want to. We weren't going to let all the work we had put in under Coach Franklin to build up this program go to waste. At least that was our thought process going into the season. I remember the new staff. I was the incumbent. I had started most of the games in Coach Franklin's last season. We had brought in the new staff. Brought in a guy from LSU, Stephen Rivers, Philip Rivers' younger brother. He's just another great guy to be some quarterback competition. We had a really touted guy in the class below me named Johnny McCrary, who was just a heck of a football player too, and had brought in two young guys, two freshmen who were both very talented. So we felt really good about the quarterback room going into the season and knew it was going to be a competition. I knew it was going to be a competition. The job wasn't just going to be handed to me because I had success the prior year. So worked really hard, had a great camp, got named the starter, I think 2 weeks prior to our first game, which was against Temple on a Thursday night in Nashville. We're fired up, we're ready to go. And then I remember there was a rain delay, a storm delay, and we were supposed to start the game at 7. I don't think we ended up starting the game until about 10 o'clock. And I still believe, and I don't know what happened, but that just took all the wind out of our sails, and we came out and just as a team just did not play well. And I think a lot of that fell on me. I think I was, my numbers were good. I think I was 3 for 4, 3 for 5, but, you know, the offense just wasn't running like it should have been running. And on one play, I had tweaked my knee a little bit, but, you know, not terribly, not enough to where I couldn't play through it if I needed to be. And I think the staff at that point made the decision that they wanted some fresh blood to try to, you know, jumpstart things. So I took a step back, took a step off the field. Can't remember who came in to take my place, but it didn't work either. And we got thumped by Temple. I don't even know if we didn't score a touchdown, because I remember I scored the first touchdown of the season for Vanderbilt 3 or 4 weeks later, because we just could not get it done on offense. The next week, my knee was still hurting, so I didn't get to play against. I could have played through it, but they made the decision. They didn't want me to try. I wanted to kind of give me some time to recover. We played Ole Miss at LP Field in Nashville. Supposed to be a Vandy home game, but was definitely not a Vandy home game. There was red and blue all over the stands. Got a much larger fan base than ours. And again, that was the year that they were really, really good, and they thumped us. So we're two games in, we're 0-2. We haven't even scored a touchdown yet, and everybody's just defeated. I mean, we felt so bad. Felt like we had all the momentum we had gained the prior 2-3 years was just gone. Then things started looking up. We played UMass the next week. I was cleared to play. They started off the game with one of the true freshmen, just, again, trying to find something to work. And he struggled, so they put me back in, and we were able to come back and win that game thanks to some really strong defensive play. And we finally scored a touchdown or a couple touchdowns, and, you know, we felt really good about where we were then, because we felt like we had changed the season around, things were looking up. But then the next week we play South Carolina at home. We have a kickoff return for a touchdown on the first play. I throw a touchdown pass to go up 14-0. But 3 plays prior to that touchdown pass, I had taken off on a run down the middle and gotten flipped by one of South Carolina's big safeties and landed on my head. And immediately knew something was wrong. I'd had concussions before, but so I knew kind of the symptoms. But at that point, I was young and dumb and wanted to keep playing, so I kind of tried to shake myself out of it. And I remember being a guy interested in medicine. I knew the signs that the people on the sidelines were looking for, and made sure that I was not going to show them that I was exhibiting those signs when I was on the field during that drive. But I will say, when I threw the touchdown pass to go to send us up 2 scores, the receiver I was going to throw it to, I saw 3 of him, and I just threw it at the middle one.
Wow.
Luckily, that was the right one. He caught it, scored. But then I came to the sideline, and they had saw me shaking my head, so I hadn't hit it well enough, and did the sideline test and took me to the locker room. And we ended up losing that game, and I was out for 5-6 weeks. So that was not how I expected my first full season as a starter to go. It was tough. It was really tough.
Some of the things people don't realize when collegiate players suffer a concussion is they think, well, gosh, you're out of the game for 5 or 6 weeks. They're not going to see you on the field. Can you talk about what your life was like here in pre-med, trying to study, trying to keep up with all of that while you're suffering the from a pretty severe concussion?
That was really hard. It was really hard because the things we do to study now, you know, it's all on a computer or a tablet or things like that. And that's, we know that's one of the things that really keeps you from shutting your brain off and healing from a concussion. So I couldn't study. I couldn't do anything. I remember I had to withdraw from 1 or 2 classes because I could not do the work. I was physically unable to. And one of the teachers was very understanding, and one of them was not very understanding at all, which was unfortunate. It was even more unfortunate because she was the wife of one of the head coaches in the Vanderbilt Athletic Department. So I would hope that she would have been more understanding, but was not. But, you know, you have to miss a lot of class because physically can't go, can't practice. So you're separated from your entire sports system and your team. I remember we have our weight room looked over out over our practice field. And I remember sitting in our weight room with shades on in a window, just watching practice because they wouldn't let me go outside. Rightfully, that was the right decision to make. But it was a very lonely time, and it was a very difficult time. I couldn't be with my team, and I couldn't study the way I knew I needed to make the grades that I wanted to make. So it was really tough.
One of the things that we've wrestled with, and one of the reasons that we're no longer coaching in college anymore, is that I didn't necessarily feel like, while we were at Purdue, I didn't feel like we did everything that we could when a player for players that did have concussions, or that we did everything that we could to prevent concussions. And certainly the game of football, I think right now, is not doing everything that it can to prevent them. I certainly recognize it's a violent and physical game, and bad things can happen anytime, anywhere. But we've been on a mission probably the last 18 months, 2 years.
3 years, almost three years now.
Oh, boy. Really, to try to make the game safer. And
there's a lot of resistance.
Well, the picture that you paint, though, is it's not just Saturdays. You know, Vanderbilt football was not just suffering because Patton wasn't on the field on Saturdays. The students are suffering. This is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You're dropping out of classes and you're planning to go to med school, and, you know, you're not allowed to look at a screen. I've seen so many young men that have just had to sit in their room for weeks at a time in a dimly lit room because they suffered concussions, and some of which I know will happen, but some of which, son of a gun, we can do something to prevent these. And you certainly paint a vivid picture in that. As we finish up then, talk about your decision as you're trying to marry now. You find out you get accepted to med school at Vanderbilt.
Right.
You still have 2 years of eligibility left to play
right.
football at Vanderbilt. How do you balance academics in big-time football and the risks of serious brain injury when you're going into a field like medical study, and how you reached the talk about the decision that you reached and kind of how you reached that decision?
Well, my master plan going into that final season, I'd taken the MCAT, I applied to medical school that year, mainly just because I wanted to get it out of the way. My plan was to hopefully get accepted to medical school that year, and then a lot of schools will allow you to defer for 1 or 2 years to do other things, and they'll just hold a spot for you, which was my plan. I was going to get in somewhere, hopefully defer and stay at Vanderbilt for my final 2 seasons of eligibility, and, you know, work on either a master's degree of some sort, an MPH or MBA, something like that. But then the injury thing happened, and the concussions happened. And I missed, I don't even remember how many games I missed, but it was a lot of games. I think the only 2 games I remember playing that year were starting the Temple game, the UMass game, some of the South Carolina game, and then the Tennessee game at the end of the year, which I was not going to miss, like we talked about earlier. That was a big game for me, an important game for me. But I got into the University of Tennessee. I got into Vanderbilt, which was one of the the proudest moments of my life. And this was, you know, in the spring. This was before, might even been during spring practice. I was practicing with the team, preparing to come back and be the starter for the next year. And then I get this wonderful phone call that, you know, one of the big reasons that Vanderbilt was so attractive to me was its medical school. And here I've been accepted to the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Just wow, an unbelievable opportunity. But I've still with the team, still practicing to be the guy. And it really made me sit back and think, what do I want? What do I want out of this? Am I still thinking that I want to pursue a professional career? Is that even going to be an option for me? Here I have one of my dreams literally being handed to me in the form of an acceptance letter. Is it worth saying no to in order to keep pursuing this other dream? And I think ultimately that's what made my decision. I was concerned about the concussion stuff. But ultimately I knew that my future lay in medicine, and that even though I love football so much, still miss it every day. Every time I see a Vanderbilt player strap on that black and gold, man, it makes me excited. Makes me wish I was out there with them. But I knew that it was time for me to move on and pursue another dream. And so I remember walking into my post-spring evaluation meeting with the whole staff. We had our spring game the week before. I'd done really well. And I think that was the hard part for me, because they were expecting me to come back and be the guy. You know, there was not going to be any of this quarterback shuffling like there had been a year before, largely due to injuries on my part. But I walked into the meeting and said, I've been given this unbelievable opportunity to pursue a lifelong dream, not just a dream of the next 2, 3, 4 years. This is something I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life, and I can't turn it down. I've got to take it. And surprisingly, they were all very supportive. I think they were disappointed, as you would expect, but I don't think there was any bad blood, and that was that. Next morning, I went and told my teammates, which was probably one of the hardest conversations I've ever had. I still feel bad about it. Some part of me still feels like I, you know, quit on my team. But I think ultimately it was the right time for me to move past football and move toward my passion and my career as a hopeful future surgeon.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm really struck with your self-awareness, your ability to stop and really go into yourself, into your self-awareness, your self-consciousness, and say, like, what is this about for me? What is it that's really calling to me right now? And being able to make a difficult decision that maybe isn't the most popular, or maybe isn't the thing that some people think you should do. I mean, that's really a remarkable show of not just self-awareness and self-possession, but courage. And I think moral courage too. Like, I mean, your ability to impact the world, it's not just your dream, Patton, like, to be a doctor. You're not just being a doctor for you. You know, you're being a doctor because you want to be somebody who can help people and help heal people and help people deal with really scary moments in their life and really serious injuries. I mean, that makes the world a better place, that you made that choice. And I really want to affirm that. And I'm glad that the coaches affirmed it. And I'm going to be praying that you can feel any burden lifted off of you about the word quit. You didn't quit anything. You made a decision to be who God made you to be, which is a healer, you know, and that's awesome. Being a quarterback's pretty cool, but being a healer, that's a gift from God. So I really affirm you in that decision.
Well, thank you. Those are kind words. I appreciate that.
You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @ShoopsGoingDeep.